Welcome to the Real Growth Podcast, where we like to talk about real stories of business, personal growth, and we've been on a rampage here lately having all types of small business owners come in, talk about their stories, and today we're going to learn about one that's a startup that has recently grown here in Rochester, and it's popping. So let's start it off. Go ahead and introduce yourself and share about the business that you have.
Hello, my name is D'Angelo Tynes, and I'm with Papa's Gourmet Popcorn right downtown here in Rochester, Minnesota. We basically have over 80 flavors, and we're under a year old, so we're brand new here to town.
And D'Angelo, let's go back to the beginning stages of business and school.
Yeah.
Are you from Rochester originally? What's your story?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised here, so I graduated from John Marshall in 2016. After that, I headed up to the U of M. I graduated in communications in there in 2020, and I worked in sales for about 3 years after I graduated.
Nice. In high school, did you have kind of an ambition to be in business, or what? Where would you say that started to kick off for you, that business was of interest?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up, you know, doing like the hot dog stands, lemonade stands. So I always knew I wanted to do something. Then in high school, I got into a startup called Favor. It was actually an app that we built in town. It's people complete like small tasks. So if someone needed their lawn mown, you know, we'd connect the user and we'd connect the person who to complete the task. So that was founded by a couple of guys in Rochester. I was able to do some marketing stuff for them, get into some speeches, do kind of my first kind of public speaking and getting into sales. So that kind of helped me jump into my sales route. And I still work with a couple of those guys to this day.
And were they high school schoolmates, or how'd you find them, or how'd they find you?
Yeah, so I played basketball for John Marshall, and Solomon, he was actually a couple of grades younger than me, and he's always been like very tech savvy. He's always been a developer, and he developed the app. So he was a sophomore in high school. He developed a whole front end, a back end, something. He placed it on the Apple store, the Google store. Crazy. And he kind of came to me and was like, will you speak at these events? Will you kind of help us get the word out around town? And I agreed.
And something that's, I think, was probably interesting is he saw it in you to be able to communicate about his app. What was that he probably saw in you? Like, were you leading in basketball? Were you sure. Just outgoing in school? Like, what were some of the traits that you had that made it easier for you than maybe some others?
Yeah, at the time, I was a captain on the basketball team, and I was just kind of, you know, always more outgoing. I wanted to know the people that I went to school with, so I knew a decent amount of my classmates. You know, I was never, you know, mean to anyone. I always wanted to never burn any bridges, so he just kind of saw that in me and thought I'd be the perfect candidate to kind of speak for his app and kind of be an ambassador for the program.
So when you started being the ambassador, what was that like as far as, can you remember your first pitch, your third pitch? Like,
yeah,
you're now, I feel like you're now converting into the salesmanship role that you maybe hadn't had.
Yeah.
And so what was that like getting into that role?
I remember my first pitch. We actually spoke at a BDPA conference, and there was about like 150 people there. So other than like my small speech class, you know, in high school, speaking in front of 30 of my classmates, I've never spoken in front of a large audience, especially like a live audience. So it was just kind of, you know, getting that nervousness out and kind of being, you know, being okay speaking within a large crowd and believing in the product. I actually, you know, I believed in the product. I thought we had a great app. I thought it was something that could do well in Rochester. So I had no problem, you know, speaking about it freely and actually, you know, putting my word and kind of my stamp on it and saying, you know, I would rely on this. I would let people come in my house and do work based off of this app. So just basically believing in the product helped me. And, you know, the rehearsals and the stuff that we did, you know, leading up to the BDPA conference kind of gave me the confidence to go on stage and speak about it so freely.
That's cool. Yeah, I feel like that's the inroads to sales in a way.
Right.
Early on in your life. When you think about that phase and making those pitches, what were some of the hurdles? You mentioned nervousness, for example.
Yeah.
Like I often think people that are good at communicating, when others see it, they just feel like, oh, they got it. It's a knack. It comes easy to them. And they don't recognize maybe some of the anxieties that you have in going up and talking. So what were some of the hurdles you encountered through that journey?
Just basically practicing. Like, I never wanted to go up there and not knowing what I was going to say. You can never practice it to be 100% perfect. It's never going to go exactly how you practice, but at least having some sort of practice leading up to them. So I practice in front of my parents. I asked some of my roommates at the time, you know, can I practice speaking in front of you guys? So I just wanted to do it in some sort of live audience, in some sort of setting. I didn't want it to be completely brand new going up there. So that kind of practice and repetition, just like anything else, is going to help.
Cool. as you went through high school and you are faced with the decision, should you, shouldn't you, do you want to go to college?
Yeah.
What led you to going to college and then ultimately deciding on communications?
So I never knew I wanted to be in sales. My dad, he's a computer engineer for Mayo Clinic. So I was going to go that route. So I started majoring in computer science, and I found out very quickly that it was not for me. I did about a year of it, and it's not that I couldn't do the work, as I just didn't like doing the work. Like, I like speaking to people. I like that human interaction. So I talked to a couple of people, you know, around campus, a couple of counselors and stuff. So they pointed me into the communications, the mass communications world. And it kind of made sense of what I was doing at the time. So we were still doing Favor, and our mass communications was basically communicating a message through multiple channels, in which we were kind of doing. You know, we're speaking at public events, we're doing the Favor app on Facebook, we're doing it on Instagram. So that was multiple channels. So I was like, I can apply this, you know, right now to what I'm doing. So it ended up sticking, and that's how I got the communications route.
And how was college for you, just looking back? Was it something that you really enjoyed? Was it something that you learned business other than communications, other aspects of business? Like, reflecting on college, what would you say for those that maybe are considering college as an option?
I would say the biggest thing I took away from college is the connections and the people I've met. So some of the people that I met in college, they've helped me to get where I am now. They helped me, you know, advise me on some of the Pappas things. I actually got some funding from one of the guys up in the cities, who he helped me fund a little bit of our startup, our fundraising platform. So just basically meeting people, meeting a bunch of different people, and then keeping those connections and not burning bridges over time.
It's so cool that you say that, because I feel like we often get wrapped up in, well, the cost, or some of the time that you're spending there is not necessarily worth it, in quotations, relative to, you know, the classes that you apply to later on in life. But if you bring it back to the connections,
oh my gosh,
that unlocks a whole nother opportunity for you in your life. If you properly nurture those connections, if you build relationships, if you aren't afraid to just get to know people and find out what they're doing in their life, and how you can work together and collaborate in the future.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
When it comes to college and then deciding what to do after college, were you, you know, in your freshman year already thinking about that? Did it take until your junior year? Like, where in college were you like, okay, what am I going to do after this? Is this Favor app going to be a thing that's full time? Where did that decision come in?
So I did an internship with this company based in Rochester. They basically host people's websites. It was, I think it had to do something with Joomla. It was called Soken. So I worked with them a little bit, and I was kind of, you know, working with templates and different things, people's websites. And I was like, all right, I need to steer away from the computer programming, the website kind of phase. And then I reached out, this was my senior year in college. Sonny, he's actually a guy in town. I don't know if you know Sonny.
Yep.
Reached out to me. He was the SDR manager over at Digital River. So they have an office up in the cities. And he was like, hey, I have an opening on my team. I'd love it for you to apply. I know you're not fully graduated yet, but you're going to be graduating in the spring. So I applied, you know, I did the 3-round interview, and I ended up getting the job. So I had a job kind of lined up for when I did graduate. So after I graduated, I started being an SDR right away. And I think that was the most impactful moment of my career so far, because being an SDR has taught me just so much about life and so much about business that, you know, I always recommend people coming out of college who may not know what they want to do. If you can find a sales development role, I would 100% take that any day of the week.
And is that the abbreviation, sales development role?
Sales development representative, or business development representative, BDR, SDR, they kind of go hand in hand.
And what was it of that experience that you lead to recommend it? Is it because you get so many different types of interactions, or like what is it?
Yeah, so you're cold calling. So I was in the SMB, so the small to medium business, and I was cold calling, you know, COOs, CEOs, CTOs of these, you know, pretty decent sized companies, and trying to set meetings with them. They have no idea who I am. They have no idea how I got their number. They don't know. They've never heard of my company. So being able to speak with them, you know, based off of no prior interaction, you know, kind of getting that nervousness out. Then now, if you do set the meeting, now you're setting a meeting for like your account manager, your account executive. You're sitting in on those meetings. You're kind of seeing based like, has your outreach worked? So you're cold calling, now they're coming to the meeting, kind of what what knowledge have they gained over your company over time? Because you're putting them in these different sequences. You're emailing them over time. You may be calling them 10 times in 30 days. You may be sending 15 emails in 30 days. So it's a bunch of different interactions with a bunch of different higher up leaders and decision makers.
Yeah. So you're really getting an inside look as to how the sales process works, and you're the beginning touch point of that.
Right. And how business works. Because a lot of the times I would get like a secretary, then, you know, that's a gatekeeper. So you got to get past the gatekeeper. You have to kind of almost explain your importance to her so she can give it to her boss. And then that boss may not necessarily be the decision maker in the company, and you might have to go over to go up. So it's kind of just, you get to see the structures and how companies work and how different roles kind of communicate with each other.
Cool. Yeah, that's, it's funny because some of the other podcasts we've had in the business journey that people have shared, there's that similarity of where they've done sales in different parts of their yes. career, and whether or not they like it. I feel like you like it. You enjoy that journey of trying to get the sale.
Yeah. I fell in love with it over time. Yeah. Now it's like a cat and mouse game.
Right. And even if they don't like it, I would say that there's that continued message of that experience leads to you understanding more about business than any other experience, because you do right. have to pitch your services and pitch yourself. And that's a really big component of any type of business is
exactly.
I have something that you may want, and I'm going to try to convince you on what, why.
Right. And revenue is the bottom line. If your company's not generating revenue, then it's not going to exist. So sales is, to me, it's the most important thing in business is sales. That's how you pay yourself. That's how you pay your employees. That's how you pay your rent. You know, all your costs is sales.
So you're an SDR. Did you stay in that position for a long period of time? Was it a short period of time? I can't wait to get to the point of like, what yeah. led you to where you're at today?
So I stayed in that position for 9 months. So I started off with the SMB. Then, you know, I was doing well in my role and they promoted me to enterprise. So then I was like prospecting into companies like Adobe, like large companies trying to get in contact, you know, Lego.
How many gatekeepers are within companies like that?
See, stuff like that is crazy because they have different departments overseas and stuff as well. So sometimes they may be working remotely, but the guy who is a decision maker, he may live in like Egypt or India or something like that. So the time zones are a big thing. So I started even waking up at like 2 a.m. just to get a call in, just because I know I was like 9 a.m. hit time, because I'm never going to make it when I'm working my regular hours. So you have to start coming up with like kind of some weird things you're doing and kind of some, you know, not so regular hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're in that position 9 months, and yeah. then what?
So then Sonny, he ended up leaving, you know,
okay.
Sonny, he recruited me. You know, I look up to Sonny. I think he's a, you know, awesome manager. He's probably one of the best managers I've ever had in sales. So he left. And then once you're a SDR or a BDR and they see that on LinkedIn, you have so many recruiters that recruit you all the time. So like once I was in my role for 5 months, I had at least probably like 3 to 4 recruiters a week offering me different positions, trying to do interviews. And then I never would reply or never listen to him. But once he left and I was like, all right, you know, now my ears open. I'll start listening to kind of what you have to say. And then this recruiter, she was like, I have an associate account manager role, you know, based in Eagan. It's for an IT consulting company. You know, it's a pay raise. I think you do well. But the only thing is in person. And I was very hesitant at the time to be like, you know, I'm used to working remote, but I wanted to change. I was like, I've never actually worked in an office. What is it like to go in every day, have to be in the office 5 days a week to commute back and forth? So I ended up going through those rounds of interviews. Then I ended up working at Hallstatt Consulting based in Eagan. So that's an IT consulting company. So I was placing people. Basically, what we do is we'd go out and find specialized developers that work in like the robotics unit at Delta. We'd have a recruiting team. They would recruit, you know, these people to work on these specialized programs. And we would talk to the hiring manager at Delta. They'd be like, all right, we need a Power BI developer to work starting next month. Then I would tell my, you know, recruiting team, we need a Power BI developer. They would find someone and I would do like the final interview before then we pass them off to the hiring manager.
Cool.
So even I have no idea how to code Power BI or anything like that. We kind of had to learn how to weed out people, because you could tell when people didn't actually know what they were doing. if they related stuff back to like their personal experience and their work history, this and that, then I kind of knew that they were going to be good for the job. And some people just kind of list things that you can see on Google. Oh, this is what Power BI is, not actually I've done this with that and worked with it.
I feel like there's some similarities to what you see relative to the internet as well in people talking about business. And what I'm getting at is there's a lot of people that talk about what to do in business, but they may not have actually ran a business or built a business. Or,
100%.
And so it's some of that type of theme that's occurring in that environment as well. And that's every environment, right?
And you'll be able to pick that out quick. If you're just talking about definitions of something you can find on Google and not being hands-on, then you know right away.
So you're in that position. How did you get into business? I want to jump right to it. Like what?
Yeah.
Because it's totally different. Like you're working for somebody, you have a job, you have a target.
It is.
If you accomplish your target, you're doing extremely well and you can grow within that field. At some point, the cross had to come where you were like, I got to do something on my own. And I'm curious when and why that was.
For sure. So in 2016, my cousin, he started Papa's Gourmet Popcorn.
Okay.
So I was always, I went out to his opening. I went out to both his stores opening in Illinois. So I was always around the business and I was watching them grow.
So were you working in your other job in 2016 then too?
So 2016, I was just graduating high school, going to college. So I knew I was going to college and I was just watching them from afar. We travel out there for the grand openings, but I was keeping up with his Facebook page. I was texting him and awesome job, cuz, I'm glad to see your business is doing well. And then I was like, I want to get into this. I was like, he's doing so well out there. Our family's always been kind of like popcorn lovers. We've always experimented with popcorn. I was growing up, we'd pop popcorn and like M&Ms and stuff. So it's always been like a thing in our family to, eat popcorn and kind of be enthusiasts about it. And I was like, I want to bring one to my hometown before you start getting too big and, opening too many spots and kind of forget about me. So I knew he was working on another location that's kind of by the Cub Stadium. And I was like, can we please try to put one in Rochester before we do that? So this was in 2021. And, COVID kind of was still a thing. So we were kind of looking at spots. And
were you working in your other job?
I was still working in my other job.
So part of your brain's going, I really want to get this thing going. I'm seeing my cousin be successful in it.
Yeah.
And then the other part is like, well, my job's going good though, too.
Yeah, exactly. Because I still need an income because I can't just drop that.
Right.
So I didn't quit my final job until like 2 weeks after our store opened. So I had my job leading all the way up to the store opening. Then once the grand opening stuff came, that was November 14th, 2022. So once that came, I was like, all right, I don't even have enough time to be back and forth. So once I approached him, he was like, all right, let's put one downtown. Let's start looking. That was 2021. COVID was still around and I was like, we need walking traffic. So people weren't kind of moving around the same. So I was like, let's wait. And then actually, so coming up in like 5 days will be our year anniversary of signing our lease. We signed it July 30th, 2022.
Okay.
So once we signed it, it was kind of, all right, now we got to do the build out. Now we got to kind of design it and do all that. And, our landlord, he gave us 1 month free rent. So we had to kind of put things together so quickly just because we don't want to keep paying our downtown rent and, we're not bringing in any money.
Right.
So it was kind of like a scramble to, get the architect in, to get the general contractor in, which was Kramer Construction. He did an awesome job. Adam was great to work with throughout the whole thing. So I was just very lucky to have, him on the team and my cousin on the team kind of guide me throughout the process.
So you jump into business and you're leaving your job. Was there pay that was guaranteed? Was there any, or was it based
for sale
for you personally? So here you leave your job that has pay on a regular basis.
Yes.
And you get into business. Was there like, okay, D'Angelo, you're going to get X amount an hour just to go through this process, right? Or was it, you're going to learn how to make money and then you'll get pay after you learn how to make money, we try to set it up as
best
as possible.
That's basically exactly the second option. It was kind of like we're going to learn how to make some money and then you're going to pay yourself second. So we just dove in head first and it's been a crazy journey up until this point and a big learning experience. I'm thankful for it all because without it, I wouldn't be able to make the decisions I'm able to make today. I wouldn't be in the position I'm in today. So I'm very thankful for the
journey. Been able to pay yourself yet?
Yes. Yes. Now I am. Yes. Now I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I work with my accountant. I got an accountant now. At first I didn't have that. I was the accountant. I was doing the social media. You know, I was still popping popcorn in the store. I was trying to find employees. So it was just so much at first. But now that we got a good team and I don't have to necessarily be in there every day, now I'm able to kind of start, you know, expanding the brand. We've been focusing on fundraising a lot lately. That's something I'm very passionate about and want to, you know, continue to grow throughout these next couple months and years.
So I love having you here, being that it's basically the 1 year anniversary of signing your lease.
Yeah, appreciate
and,
that.
And just, I want you to dive into, if you had to sit right here with someone that's has this idea of opening a restaurant, has this idea of opening a business that involves making things such as yours, what would be some of the advice you would give them relative to that process alone? And I ask it from a place of, we get a lot of people that inquire and ask about opening a restaurant.
Yes.
And I do my best to describe what it takes, but hearing it from you, I think would be extremely helpful.
I would say, ask around. Don't be afraid to ask questions and ask people for help. Dave Kinnenberg, he's one of the owners over at Chip Shots. He, you know, they're not necessarily a restaurant, but they serve food. So he knew what it's like opening a commercial kitchen. So he told me about the process. He actually put me in contact with Adam Kramer, the general contractor. So, and Adam, he put me in contact with Paul Armin, the architect. So it's just ask around, leverage your connections. You never know who people might know. So don't be afraid to ask your network for help.
And when you had to touch on the timeline, because I feel like often, like you said, it was a month.
Yeah.
Like, and that's fast turnaround. Like
it ended up being longer. Yeah, so right. We ended up having to pay, you know, we got it in July. Our plan was to open in September. So we have that free month to do the build out. But as you know, with permits and everything in Rochester and Olmsted County, it doesn't necessarily move fast. They're very thorough on how they look at their plans. So you're not going to get a permit in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So it's going to take that full 6 to 8 weeks. And that's something I didn't realize. My cousin didn't really realize it either, because Illinois is different. Yep. They're able to, you know, do some of the work even before the permit. You can't pick up a hammer in Rochester until you got that permit. You can't dig a hole until you have a permit. So it's very different. So that was a learning process for the both of us through that whole thing.
And then to add on top of that, you're going through the backlog of what COVID created for the construction industry. So there had to be some pieces that drug on relative to getting parts or aspects that you just didn't.
Our biggest thing was the popcorn equipment. That was the biggest backlog for us. Like our machinery, we didn't know if it was going to arrive in time for our opening date. I actually had to go to Illinois, buy the equipment because someone just happened to sell some used equipment and then bring it back ourselves. Because if we ordered it brand new, it was like 6 to 8 months out, something crazy like that. And I'm like, we already signed the lease. Like, we have to. We have no other option at this point but to get the equipment. So we searched throughout the country and, you know, piece by piece found things that we need. You know, we have like these thing called tumblers that spin like the cheese favors. We have two tumblers. We found one tumbler in Indiana. We found another tumbler in Illinois. We found one of our caramelizers, I think they had down in Cincinnati. So like we were piecing things together.
And that, I love that, because just know you are not the only one that goes through that entire process of like, you sign the lease and you think, okay, now we're going to get things rolling. And then all of a sudden you find out all that it takes to get things rolling. And it's like, you're driving across country to pick up equipment.
Yeah. And it was crazy. You have no other choice. Cause what are you going to do? You can't just not bring in any money. You can't not bring in any revenue. So it kind of, with your back up against the wall, you get creative and it kind of brings out the best in you, honestly. When you have the, you know, limited amount of time and limited amount of resources, you're going to get creative.
Mm-hmm. So you get open and it was November?
November 14th, yep.
So you're pushed back from September.
Yep.
So one positive I would see in that is you're going into the holiday season. So in this business, I imagine that's a great place to be.
Yeah, still to this day, November has been our highest grossing. I mean, no, December has been our highest grossing month.
Okay.
And that was, you know, our second month being open, not even a full month. You know, we opened on the second week of November. So I can't even imagine what the holiday season is going to look like.
So you're able to get your feet underneath you very quickly relative to sales coming in. Through that process, how do you even explain all the things you learned? I mean, now I feel like, okay, so you've done all the work, and I'll use the analogy of swimming. You've done all the work to like get the pool built, and you got the diving board, and you know, you got the pool full of water. So it's all set up.
Right.
And now it's like, you got to learn how to swim. So someone just pushes you or you just jump. Yep. And then how the heck what do you learn in that process of getting the business open and then being booming?
Right.
Come December.
Having a good team is critical. Like now I have two good managers and I have a solid staff of 10 that I can rely on. At first we were just scrambling just to get anyone in there. Cause at the time all these holiday orders are coming in, you know, we have a thousand bags we have to get done by Tuesday. They might place it on like Sunday night or something like that. So it's just finding people that I can rely on. And at first we had a bunch of people, you know, calling in sick, stuff like that. I never had to deal with it. You know, growing up, being younger, the person in high school, I was the one who was calling in sick. Now I'm on the receiving end and I'm like, all right, I get it now. I get why they, you know, you got to find a replacement or you have to have someone cover your shift and stuff like that. So just going through that whole process was crazy, especially being in our second month being open and not really having a solid staff. Now this upcoming Christmas, it'll be a lot different. I won't be scrambling as much. I won't be staying in there till 2 a.m., 2:30 late at night bagging bags. I was doing, you know, my girlfriend and I, her sister and me, my mom, my dad, we were the ones bagging a lot of the orders. So it was like family, you know, close friends helping out. So it'll look a lot different this year.
You got through it. You learned. The team is one piece. Talk a little bit about the efficiencies that you learn in operation as well, because that I imagine has changed in where you put things, how they get placed, how they get made. What are some improvements you've found in that process?
Yeah. So I recently read a book on Amazon called Profit First. I read it about 3 to 4 months ago and it completely changed how I look at business. When I first opened up, I was so new to being a business owner. I was taking on unnecessary expenses. I was paying people to do SEO. I may have paid someone to do our social media. You know, I'm paying for different subscriptions for stuff I don't need. And I just looked at the bottom line. Once I got with my account, it was eating away at the profit. All these stuff that you don't necessarily need. So I started cutting down on anything that doesn't affect our quality and our service. I completely cut out. So now, like those same subscriptions, I don't need. I don't need, you know, Adobe software to change a PDF. I thought I needed that at first. I don't need to pay someone, you know, $1,000 a month to help us out on SEO. I can go on, you know, Fiverr, Upwork and find someone to do it for $50. So it's being more resourceful and being more creative. And kind of what I started doing is I take the profit first out of our business. So once we have our gross revenue, I take the money that we're going to profit out. And then what's left over is what we have to for our expenses, for our rent, you know, to spend on marketing, to spend on, you know, any upgrades we might want to make. So once I'm able to start taking that money out first, paying myself, you know, my family first, and then kind of using the leftovers, it's forced me to be more creative.
Interesting. Yeah.
Cause now now I see once I take the money out that we have, I don't have the money
to limited
pay.
Amount.
Yeah. I don't have the money to pay someone $700 to do our social media.
Got it.
I don't have, you know, $1,000 in Facebook ads to do. So it forces you to get more creative.
Got it. Yeah. So in that analogy, you take the profit out, meaning paying yourself, because so many business owners don't pay themselves.
Exactly. And I can see how that could spiral on for years. And then you're constantly living check to check.
Yep.
So I realized, like, if I'm doing work in the business, if I'm going back there and making popcorn, I'm going to clock in and I'm not going to pay myself a crazy amount, $50 an hour. I might clock in for $16 an hour. And that will be separate than the profit I'll take.
Yep.
Because if I'm not doing it, that was supposed to be someone else doing it. And it will skew your numbers.
Yep.
Because if you're constantly doing all the work, if you're constantly doing this and that, you may think you're making money, but you're not really paying yourself. So your labor is screwed. Is skewed compared to your revenue.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. What was the title of the book?
Profit First.
Profit First. Okay. Yeah, and we started the podcast with that is, you know, have you started paying yourself? And you said you have, and that's part of what has led to
brand new, just started. So that's like a 3 month process.
And I do see that a lot, including myself, where you sign up for something and you think you need it and it's going to help solve some problem. And, you know, they get you on the sales pitch relative to how they package it online. And next thing you know, you're 6 months into it and you're like, am I really utilizing that tool to the extent that I should be?
Right.
And but as a business owner,
taking money out, you constantly see it taken away in it.
But as a business owner, you also think, well, even if I only use it a portion of the time, it's maybe worth it. Right. But at the end of the day, you got, is it really worth it?
Exactly. Right.
And by only having that limited resource, you have to make that determination. Is it really worth it or not?
For sure.
It's cool.
Exactly.
So your business now, as you come on this, you know, this baby's almost 1 year old, barely even grown yet. What are some things that you are excited about as you continually grow your business? What are some things that you're going through that are challenging as you grow your business? Like, I want to wrap it into two, because we often talk just about the optimistic and positive things, which I think are great. But also, what are some things that you're like, I got to figure out how to do this better?
For sure. So things I'm excited about is definitely the fundraising platform. You know, back to school, we've been helping a lot of schools do fundraising. We started a fundraising platform called Papa's Gives. It's basically like GoFundMe, but with popcorn. They send a link out to family and friends, and 50% of the profit that they get from the sales goes back to that cause. So that's something I'm really excited about. I'm really excited to, you know, start pushing as schools come back. And one thing that's kind of been difficult is the fluctuation in prices, right? So since we've started back in November, our cheese prices have gone up. So in our vendor, they fluctuate on different things. You know, they say it's not on their end, and we just have no control over the pricing on some things. So I'm working on ways around that. You know, there's always different avenues. So I'm kind of exploring some different avenues, speaking with some different farms, trying to go directly to the source. And we're thinking we're going to have a farm out in Wisconsin start producing our cheese exclusively for all the Papas's, and, you know, the Papas in Rochester and the two Papas in Illinois. And that would drastically cut down the price.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's not like you could, but you don't want to change your prices weekly or monthly, even for that case, because it's like people are just getting used to your brand.
Exactly.
If they come in 1 month and then they come in 6 months later and the prices have changed even 5 to 10%, they're going to be like, what's going on here?
Exactly. And people talk, especially in Rochester. Someone might post on Spotted in Rochester, something like that, and and news gets around fast. So the last resort has been changing our prices. We've been kind of cutting a lot of things out so we can keep the prices the same and keep our customer service and the same quality of service the same.
If you had to talk to a business owner that is not in the generation that you are, and the generation you are in is very much tech savvy.
Yes.
What would be some piece of advice or just insight that you would give them based on your experience and now running a business and how they can use technology to be a better business operator?
I would definitely say have some sort of online presence and have an online website where they can either order your product or order your services from. I was looking at the numbers actually the other day. Between 15% of our, you know, total gross revenue is from online. So like, we have a lot of patients that come in. They may be from, you know, Florida, Texas, New York, California, wherever they're coming from. They come in, they try our product, they like it, and now they're ordering it back at home. So we fulfill a lot of online orders to different states just based off of the Mayo Clinic bringing that traffic into town. So I would definitely say have some sort of online presence, have some sort of website, you know, social media where people can go and find you on.
And adding on to that, do they need to go build the website with a vendor that charges them X amount of thousands of dollars to build it?
No, I would always go to Upwork or Fiverr. I live on there.
Really?
Yes. Like I got our website done off of there. I think it was $200. I'll be honest. So that's, I mean, they're just taking a template and adding your pictures and everything. But if you have a company doing that, they're going to charge you $5,000 because you're paying for the, you know, the CEO salary, you're paying for the building, you're paying for employee and all that. Whereas Fiverr or Upwork, it's a person you're paying. Their hourly rate is going to be a lot lower than, you know, a local company. But I get it. Some people like having, you know, that local presence, someone walking into your office, you know, walking you through it. You're not going to get that on Upwork. You're going to, a lot of the times, and maybe someone in a different country and they may be on different time zones, so you have to be talking to them at odd hours and stuff might not go as quickly, but it's the savings is crazy.
Well, and I'll add on to that. Like, of course we want to support that local company that is here, that the employees are here, all those things. That being said, so many people buy that fancy thing, and I'll say the fancy website or the fancy camera or whatever it may be, and then they don't actually optimize it. So it just sits there. And then time goes on and it's 5 years later and its website's outdated and they haven't touched it. Where I feel like what you're sharing is, if you get that freelancer that does it for a more inexpensive rate, a really reasonable rate, at least then you have the presence, and then see what that presence does for your business, and then figure out how you can expand on there.
Yes.
And that expansion could lead into working with that local person to say, okay, I have a platform, I have traffic coming in, but I need to figure out how to take this traffic and build upon it. Right. How can we plug in your services to that?
Exactly. Yeah. And definitely don't get away from the local people. There are local reasonable place. There's freelancers in Rochester as well. So I would definitely say, look local first. It's just, when I was looking local, like you said, they were coming back with some kind of prices that at the time we're still buying equipment. We're still buying, you know, the awning we had to put around the building. We're still buying the signs for the wall. I just decided, I was like, I can't spend $2,000-$3,000. I can't afford it at the moment because I have so many other things to buy.
You but want it. There's no doubt about that. You want it.
Exactly. The want is there for sure.
Right. It's just, how the heck do you afford it?
Right. With so many other costs, it's, until you actually get into business and when you're on the outside looking in, you don't realize that every dollar means something. Like, every single dollar adds up. Like, wherever you're throwing your money, it all means something. And it took me till now to realize that. Basically 3-4 months ago, I was doing everything completely different. My whole mindset was different.
I feel like that's the beautiful thing about business, is it's ever evolving. And that's something you really, from what I can gather, love to learn and love to just continually adapt and pivot and grow. And so that's, I don't know that there's any other career that offers that other than a business path because of the ever changing landscape of what business is.
And you know, when it's like your family's business, when it's for your family, you know, the next generation coming down, you're more inclined, like you're excited. You really believe in the product. I know, like, your dad with Snappy Stop, you love his burgers. I love his burgers. You're more inclined to push it. You're going to go the extra mile. You're going to do everything you have to do because it's for your family. It's your own business. It's something that you own.
Right. Let's pivot for a second. I want to talk about downtown Rochester. So, unlike most business owners, you decided to invest in downtown. I would say there's, at this time, small business owners, there's a fair amount, but not as many as other parts of town that have made investment and opened their business downtown. And part of that is because of the headlines you read of, you know, Mayo's employees aren't downtown like they were pre-COVID. What would be your insight into the year that you've been downtown, that you really appreciate about downtown, that you think there's opportunities, that you are optimistic about? And then we'll go on to the challenges, but let's start with the optimistic portion of what you see in the downtown landscape.
For sure. So I've grown up in Rochester. You know, we grow up in Rochester and we hear of Mayo Clinic. We go to Mayo Clinic when we get injured stuff. We're just so used to being around it. So when opening the business downtown, I didn't realize like how many patients actually come into the Mayo Clinic. So we were talking before the podcast, I think between 60 to 65% of all of our ticket sales, our patients are from out of town. So I didn't realize that the traffic was so large and like where everyone's coming from, Australia, Canada, you know, Texas, New York, California, different countries, different states. So Rochester has crazy transient traffic. And, you know, I knew that a little bit prior to putting the business downtown. I was like, I just think we would do best where there's the most people walking around. And I felt like, you know, I've heard all the things about Rochester downtown, about how it's dead and everything like that. And I was like, I just think we have to be where near people were walking. I was kind of estimating with one of the owners over there at Bitter and Poor. He thinks that only like 10 to 15,000 actual residents visit downtown. So like I kind of knew that prior
on like a monthly basis or like
just like on a yearly basis, like actually visit frequently, like, you know, come downtown to get drinks, come downtown, you know, kind of sit around, because Bitter and Poor, they do a lot of transient traffic as well. So talking to him prior before opening and just kind of realizing that, I was like, we have to be down there, because how many people, you know, we'll come get popcorn, you know, 20 minutes on the other side of town. Whereas like if you're walking right next to it, you might just stumble upon it and decide you want some. So I knew we needed that walking traffic and that foot traffic.
And that's the side of downtown that I would 100% agree with. I don't even recognize it because I am not delivering a product that people that visit here want often. And you have shed light into that visitor traffic is really what has made your business be successful in this short amount of time.
And then like with the online presence as well, now they're coming in from out of town. Now they're ordering online. So it's like a double-sided sword. Every time they come to Rochester for an appointment at Mayo, they come and visit us. And if they happen to get a craving back home, now we ship it to them. So I didn't realize the online portion was going to be so big going into it. That's something that was new to me. And, you know, I'm obviously very happy with it.
So with all the visitors, it's helping make your business over time. If we find different workforce, if Mayo brings back some employees, it's only going to add on to the amount of business that you can get. Do you feel confident that you can make it based upon the visitors that are coming today? Or do you always want more, but I'm just based on current traffic. Like, do you feel confident that current traffic makes this a long-standing business for years to come based on existing?
Yeah. So if we never grew another dollar, I think we could sustain that. But obviously the goal is always to bring more, we want more, as many people as we can in the shop. We want to do as many online orders as possible, but based on from what I've seen, but we still are new though. So let's see once that 1 year anniversary comes in and that newness wears off. All right, now we're not new anymore. Now we're just a popcorn shop downtown. I want to see the numbers after that because that will be more telling than whereas like people coming, oh, you guys are in a new place. You guys are the brand new shop. And even though we're 8 months into it now, people still use that word new. So once that newness wears off, then I want to see the numbers and I would have a better answer then.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a good point. Let's talk about some of the real just facts of downtown that you're experiencing as a business owner and what makes it a little bit more challenging in your opinion, based on what you've seen. And I'll use one example. The other day I saw you on First Avenue, get out of your car and you go running towards the shop. And all I can think in my mind is like, you got to grab something quick. You got to go fill in for somebody fast. And like, you had to feed the meter if you even had time to feed the meter. And you're like, I got to get to the shop. And so I imagine parking is part of that challenge that opens your eyes in downtown.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I've paid over $700 in parking tickets since we first opened. So that I would say
cost of doing business downtown related to parking.
That's by far the biggest challenge downtown is just, you know, the meters and the ramps. If you buy a spot, it's not cheap. It's $185 a month for one spot. And, you know, we decided it wasn't worth it. That was just another cost because sometimes we park it by Wells Fargo. It's cheaper over there. It's like 50 cents an hour. But then you have to make that 2-block walk rather than just across the street. So that is definitely one of the downfalls of downtown is the parking.
And that downfall of downtown, if we think about ways that it could be improved, if you had the magic wand, other than just making parking free for all employers, like what would be some small steps to solutions that you think could help with that?
I think even for like the meters, if the first 20 minutes could be free, like that would help. Because a lot of people are like, well, we just parked illegally right on the side because we don't want to plug the meter even for, you know, 5 minutes to run into the parking shop. But then, you know, we have the bus stop over there, so they might be parking in front of the bus. So, like, it causes people try to avoid paying the meters, and it causes other problems. So if people could, you know, maybe if they could get I know the ramps, they do the hour, but the ramp is further than the, you know, the parking meter right across the street or right out front. So if they could do even, like, 15 or 20 minutes, I think that would help. And it would help the bus drivers, too, because people are parking in their lanes because they don't want to pay the meter and they want to just run in. And, you know, we can only tell people so much. We posted it on Facebook, you know, don't park off on the side because the bus drivers have come in, obviously, you know, not happy with us because our customers are coming in there. But there's only so much that we could do at that point.
And I love that idea. Obviously, that's only one portion of many ideas we could come up with. But I think that's a continued conversation I'd love to just bring to the internet to just keep people talking and thinking, because it will help the sustainability of small business downtown for years to come if we start having these conversations that could lead to some
Exactly.
Changes. And they don't have to be monumental changes, right? It's small changes that can add up over time. One other thing I'd just like to touch on and related to downtown business is like, what have you learned related to your hours? So what does that look like from what you thought going in to what it is today? Did you think you would have more sales on the weekend and they're less? Did you think the evenings would be bit, you know what?
Yeah. That's funny that you said that. I definitely thought we would do better. So we do well on Saturdays just because that's, you know, there's tournaments, there's stuff going on at the Civic Center. People are downtown, you know, eating lunch, walking around, you know, they may go down the shop at like Primp or something like that down the street. But Sundays have been our by far our worst day. And that was, you know, now that I know downtown Rochester, Sundays, it makes sense for it to be our worst day. But the other stores in Illinois, one of their best days is Sundays. So like coming into it, I just thought, I was like, oh, we're popcorn. Maybe we'll follow like the same trend as other stores. And that was like completely opposite. Just because everything's closed downtown on Sundays, you know, people are oftentimes checking out of their hotel and leaving. The newer people, they come in on Sundays, but they don't come in on Sundays till later. So we get better business towards the night on Sundays because that's when the new wave of like, you know, patients or people traveling to Rochester come in. They check in at like 5-6 at night.
Yeah, and it's funny, that is our travel pattern. The weekdays are the busy days, where if you were to go to, let's say, Wisconsin Dells, it's going to be like the weekends are crazy, right? Right. It's just flipped upside down because of the Mayo and how it operates.
Yeah, completely flipped. Nothing's even open. We're the only thing besides like Chester's and the Well. You know, all the other shopping spots are closed on the weekends. Eagle Drug, they don't open till 5 p.m. on the weekends. So we keep our same hours, so we're legit one of the only things. So sometimes we do okay on Sundays just because there's people walking around and we're the only thing open. So it's kind of like they're almost forced to come in if they want to do something.
Right. I like it. Strategy.
Yeah.
Don't take that strategy and start being the second. No, I think you need, the more people open, the more destination this becomes right for people long term. If people want to learn more about your business, where can they go online and then share about what your hours are? And then we didn't talk about your products at all, but share about a few of your products that you absolutely love.
For sure. So we're at Papas Rochester on Facebook and on Instagram, and our website is papasrochester.com. So that's P-O-P-U-S Rochester and then .com. We're open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. every single day of the week. We offer over 50 different flavors of popcorn. You can come in. We offer unlimited samples. You could put as many flavors as you want in one bag. I think our record is like 14 different flavors in a bag, if that's something you want to do. I would say my favorite flavors, I love the Oreo just because we do use real Oreos. I'm a big Oreo fan, like Oreo Blizzards, Oreo cake, anything Oreo I'm going to eat. So that's definitely one of my tops. And then I would say one of the new ones that I like is Root Beer Float. It's honestly really interesting, and you can taste the fizziness like in the Root Beer popcorn. It's crazy.
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, I should have brought some, man.
And what's some on the edge that people are like, I don't know, but you're like, you got to at least give it a shot.
For sure. A lot of people are hesitant about banana pudding. I really like it. Banana pudding is really good. Yeah. People are hesitant about it. They try it and then they like it. So banana pudding, people are always like, all right, but it happens to be like one of the top 15 sellers. So it still does well.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for joining the podcast. I love sharing and learning about your story of real growth. You're continually growing as a business owner, as an individual. Thank you for sharing it with us. And I look forward to just your continued growth in the community.
I appreciate it, Bucky. Thanks for having me on, man.
You bet.